And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this finally Friday, last Friday in March before we turn the corner into April. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel. And Bridget, we saw our first thunder showers of the year today.
If you recall, we have a gal who's been a guest and a guest host for us before, Naomi Orr, here in town. And I saw a tweet from her just before I got here today saying, I think I heard thunder.
Yeah, there was
a 580-103.
Yep, there is a line of thunder showers now into Becker County, stretching from just south of Elbow Lake through Detroit Lakes and just south of Hawley. And again, these are moving eastward, so moving away from the area. But yeah, quite a few texts and emails from people saying, hey, did I just hear thunder? Small little line of thunder showers. And there's more rain out that will be developing out to our west, now starting to take shape between Bismarck and Jamestown. That'll be moving eastward towards the FM area. So expect to see a few scattered showers as we head late in the afternoon. And we're looking at temperatures currently in the mid to upper 40s across the southern valley, but only in the 30s in the northern valley, where they saw a little bit of mixed precip earlier. And there's still a winter weather advisory north of Highway 2 as we head through the rest of the afternoon. We'll see falling temperatures after about 2 o'clock. That's when we'll start to see those temperatures falling into the 30s towards evening. And most of the precip will scoot east of the area by about 8 o'clock tonight. And then Saturday, we are looking at another storm system that will be passing to our south. As it does, that's going to clip areas of the southern valley. I think Fargo will be right on the northern end of that as we head into Saturday evening and Saturday night. Could pick up a half inch or so of snow, not much here in the FM area. But areas south around Wahpeton over towards Wadena and points southward from there, those areas could pick up 1 to 3 inches of snow. And then we'll stay in the 30s all the way through early next week. A better chance for some much-needed precip as we head into Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. Depending on temperatures, right now it looks like it'll be mainly snow. So we could have some accumulating snow Tuesday and Wednesday of next week.
And I said, how far south could that go?
For Saturday?
For next week, Tuesday, Wednesday.
That'll be right over us on Tuesday, Wednesday.
All right.
You're traveling, aren't you?
I actually am not for a change. I will be tonight, so I'm glad things are holding steady. Yeah. I'll be in Lisbon this evening for Ransom County Crop Improvement Association's banquet and so forth. I'll be one of their speakers. But we're in the clear for tonight. Tonight looks fine.
We're good to go for tonight. Okay. Yeah. Also would like to give a big shout out, breaking news from the LRC, and congratulations to Gary Lezak. And we'll be talking about more about this on our spring and summer outlook. We'll have that next Thursday on the Jay Thomas Show. And that's brought to you by Jiffy Lube of Fargo and Rowan Joe Junk Haul and Removal. And Gary was just awarded with the number one ranking in terms of forecasting hurricanes. So he beats up out NOAA, National Hurricane. I mean, just he beats
for
up.
For accuracy. Yes.
Yeah. So congratulations to Gary and the LRC. Just another feather in the cap of the LRC. And, you know, I was just at a talk today out in Dilworth, talking to some local farmers about the LRC and how it can help help our ag community. And, like I said, you know, not only can it help ag community, I mean, it's helping all around, whether it's severe weather, hurricanes, you name it. I can't say enough about it.
Well, I am feverishly scrolling here to find it, that announcement, because I thought we should add that to our weather page, et cetera. I know you've got a forward on there, but you know, we definitely want people to know that what we do here with Gary is incredibly accurate. It certainly is a lot of the help for our weather special next week. And we just like the fact that, Gary found this method. It's working out wonderfully, and it's been really helpful for our region and so many more. We're not a hurricane center, but that's okay. It influences our weather as well.
It does, no doubt about it. And a lot of questions from our ag community about, you know, how accurate is this, and, you know, is it dependable? And absolutely. I mean, like you said, Bridget, it can help everything from harvesting to planting to spraying. I mean, you name it.
Yeah, we can look. We can look for those times of what we can get accomplished in between weather, and also just looking ahead as to when we don't have precipitation, because that matters to us in when the quality of seed, are we, or if we have heavy precipitation, do we have to buy fungicide? we just see more and more folks who are planning for and thinking about how to use it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Excellent. What do we? What else we got going on today?
Oh, well, first of all, I need 65 farmers over in Minnesota. So raise your hands. Here's why. Minnesota, University of Minnesota Extension is working on a project called Probing Our Country's Soil Health. It has already launched, and they are creating what's called the Soil Health Assessment and Protocol Evaluation. It's called SHAPE. What SHAPE is going to be is an online tool that will interpret their soil health measurements, look at the change in it, offer management alternatives, et cetera. And the goal of this project is to get 13,000 soil samples from across the U.S. They want different soil types, climate, management conditions, and so much more. So if you are one of the 65 farmers in Minnesota who is willing to participate, you will receive a personalized soil health report for the fields that you offer up. You'll get a copy of a book called Probing Our Country's Soil Health, and that'll be a hard copy photo book. Also, you will be part of an online survey through a Zoom call, et cetera, where you get to share the details of your farm and hear from others. Now, if you want to enroll as a landowner participant, you are certainly welcome to just email me, ag@flagfamily.com, and I will hook you up with University of Minnesota so you can get this taken care of. Now, participants will need to grant access to the fields for a hand probe soil sample. What they are doing is they're literally sending people out to do that. Normally, we would see soil samples done with probe trucks. You know, we've got the soil probe in the cab, but they're going to hand probe these. And if you are willing to sign up for it, University of Minnesota says a big thank you. And again, I can help get you connected with them. For those of you who are listening and have questions about this and so much more, you can go ahead and reach us on our JLA Insurance phone line, 701-293-9000. Again, you can email us weather@flagfamily.com. And we hope you're following along, watching us by video, where you can do that. Facebook and YouTube, as well as Acres TV. You'll find us there at Weather and Ag in Focus. And all of our past episodes as well, because we're keeping those up to date for you, too.
All right. And who's our special guest that we have coming on today?
Okay, so today we get a chance to visit with Matt Briney. Matt is the CCO, and I believe, and Matt will correct me if I'm wrong, he is the Chief Communications Officer for the Theodore Roosevelt National Presidential Library that's being built in Medora. Why would a presidential library have anything to do with us here on Weather and Ag? It has a lot. Theodore Roosevelt has an extensive history here in the state of North Dakota. He ranched here before he was president. He was often quoted as saying he would never have been in the presidency had it not been for his time in Dakota at the time it was Dakota Territory. And it also was a recovery mechanism for him. He lost his wife and his mother in the same day. He was very close to his mother. And it's a place for him of healing and so forth. And just the techniques that he did. You know, Teddy Roosevelt was a rancher out here. He was one of the first guys to put his eye to cattle rustling. He's known to have gone out and corralled up some guys who tried to swipe his cattle. But he also was good at management practices, learning from other ranchers. He really grew as a person in his time in North Dakota.
Interesting.
Yeah. So with that library, we'll also get a little bit of an update on how the library construction is progressing. But it is actually underway right now in Medora, the complete opposite side of the state from where we sit right now.
When is that expected to be done?
That's a Matt question.
All right. Well,
I think that it's going to be best if Matt's able to tell us what's going on. In a different type of a library, Rochester, Minnesota has a seed library opening for its seventh season. Most of us go to get books, but you can also go check out seeds. They have gone through 30,000 packages of seeds in the last year. They primarily focus on vegetables, edible flowers, as well as herbs. What they're trying to do is help overcome potential food insecurity in their communities. Now, you can raise that crop and you can bring your seed back, and it can be shared again. But as a lending library, this is one of the few in the nation. For many of you who are out there doing community projects, community gardens, this might be a way for you to also do more in your local communities, townships, et cetera. So bear that in mind. Rochester has a thriving seed library to go along with their book library.
Great.
Thought that was a great step for them.
Fantastic.
All right. Well, we want to catch up on the markets. We will hear from the American Ag Network. And when we return, we'll be joined by our guest, Matt, when he is, again, with the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library in Medora. And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. Glad you're here today. And we're also very glad that our guest has been able to join us. And that is Matt Brinney. He is CCO of the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library in Medora. And Matt, did I get it right? If I say CCO, you're the Chief Communications Officer for the library?
That's correct. Yeah, great to be with you, Bridget and Dean.
Awesome.
Great to have you.
Thank you for being here. So, all right, I tried to outline a little bit of the history of Theodore Roosevelt here in North Dakota, but I have a feeling maybe you know a little bit more. So where would you like to start? Just a little bit of background on TR?
We can definitely do the background, but Bridget, I think we might need to have you as a historian on staff because you know a lot about his agricultural pursuits and his ranching pursuits. Theodore Roosevelt, he originally comes to the Badlands in 1883 to hunt bison on kind of a guy's trip. And during that time, he invests in two cattle ranches, the Maltese Cross Ranch and later the Elkhorn Ranch. But then he later returns to the Badlands after a personal tragedy, the death of his wife and his mother on the same day in the same house, February 14th, 1884, Valentine's Day. And really, North Dakota becomes a healing place for him. He writes in his journal a big X and says, "The light has gone out in my life." And he just commits to living the strenuous life. And, as you can imagine, this is a guy who gets off the train in Medora. He's got a Brooks Brothers buckskin outfit, a knife from Tiffany's, he's got glasses, right? He looks a little out of place in Medora.
In today's day and age, cowboys would look at him and say, "That man is all hat, no cattle."
That's exactly right. Yes. But, he embraces it. He's out there to learn how to, how to ranch. He does bring some people with him. So Bill Sewell, a close friend from his time in Maine, an experienced woodsman, not a cowboy, right? Not someone who knows ranching, but he comes out there and helps him with the Elkhorn Ranch as well as Wilmot Dow, also from Maine and a companion of Bill Sewell. And so together, the three of them really helped to work the land out there. They go through all the hardships that ranchers today are very familiar with. So in his time out there, he was exposed to, really brutal winters, cattle die-offs, and the fragility of natural resources. In fact, the winter of 1886 to 1887 killed most of his cattle, and it really demonstrated for him the dangers of overgrazing and the importance of sustainable land use.
A big part of TR's legacy is conservation. And would you say that some of those practices came from his time out in the Badlands, that he realized what the natural resources were, and even at that point, that we could start to lose them?
Absolutely. I mean, from a young age, he's already interested in natural life. So during his time in New York, in his brownstone, he's collecting animal specimens on his trips to the Adirondacks and abroad, and to the point where his family actually calls it the Roosevelt Museum of Natural History. And in fact, some of those objects are actually, some of those specimens are actually in the American Museum of Natural History in New York today in their collections. But so he's had an interest in outdoors. But it really isn't until he's out in North Dakota that he really gets that conservation ethic. And a lot of it is the balance between, human activity and nature's limits. I think, as a young child, he's thinking that, you can overcome anything, but nature really turns the him upside down when he's in North Dakota. And I think the other side of it is he saw how unregulated use of land and wildlife could quickly lead to depletion. This really becomes his foundational idea of conservation and policies that he adopts as president. And as you mentioned, he writes in his journal, and he does speeches later in Dickinson that he never would have become president if it wasn't for his experience in North Dakota. And it's really those wide open spaces, the rugged terrain, and the challenges of the Badlands that they left the impression that that he appreciated for a lifetime.
And Matt, is there anything that sticks out in your mind about Teddy that maybe a factoid or just something about him that not many people know about? The general public would be like, "Wow, they'd just be astonished by it." Anything that stands out?
Well, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of things in his life. I mean, everything from starting as a Republican to ending with progressive policies, you know, to bucking his own social class to support, the average worker. There are a lot of, I think, you know, you have a lot of deep ethics on this, but I think that probably his greatest legacy really is his conservation work. And, you know, during his time as president, he established 150 national forests, 5 national parks, 18 national monuments, and over 50 wildlife refuges. And so, like, these are the things that, you know, without this idea that of conservation, we would be probably without these great spaces today. And you know, the other side of it is his use of executive power, his use of pushing things through. It really is very interesting, the parallels between his time and our current politics today.
You know, that's a really great point, and we haven't even gotten close to what those politics look like. But, you know, TR was very influential in big business as well, maybe not in the way that all of the big business owners wanted, though. He had a little differential idea. But agriculturally speaking, Matt, while Teddy was here in North Dakota, how long did he stay invested in the Elkhorn or the Maltese Cross before he decided, well, I guess I can make my money other places?
Yeah, so he sells the ranch in 1898. So it's really only a few years, right? You know, he owns it. He sells it to Sylvian Ferris, one of the business owners in town. I think that at the time it served a purpose for him. But he returns after about 2 years in the Badlands. He returns back to public life. He's been writing back and forth with his family from the East Coast, and he's been, you know, contemplating different things and reflecting on his loss, but ultimately returns back to service. You know, serves as police commissioner, serves in Washington D.C., becomes governor. Of course, is a Rough Rider, and then ultimately rises to fame after Rough Rider, runs for governor, becomes vice president, which he reluctantly took because he thought it was a position that didn't yield any power. And sure enough, after a very short time, you know, McKinley is shot and he rises to become president of the United States. The funny thing about all of that is that he was causing so much trouble in New York as governor on his policies that were against large trust and big oligarchy interests, you know, that they said, we got to get rid of this guy. We got to get him out of the limelight. And so they had him run for vice president. And and so he then turns into perhaps one of the greatest presidents to reduce the corruption in politics, to make a more fair shake for the average worker, and I think those are the attributes that also are ones that are to be admired as well.
All right, I'm going to be honest. I was completely selfish on my part to book Matt to be a guest for us, because in my world, I thought that Teddy Roosevelt and then Harry Truman were probably two of the presidents that I most admired. They came from very simple agricultural backgrounds. Well, I should say Harry Truman a little bit more. But Theodore Roosevelt earned his the hard way. Again, he came in as a hunter and left a rancher, and he truly did leave an impact on Western North Dakota. So when we return from our bottom of the hour news, Matt, I have several questions for you, such as, do we know what he was raising for cattle? Did he have any particular breed? Did he cross paths with guys like the Marquis de Morez, who was trying to start a cattle packing business in Western North Dakota? And that means he wasn't just getting them luggage. There was a whole other story to that. So we're going to talk about some of those history lessons and the construction of the museum when we return. And welcome back to Weather, Nag, and Focus. You know, if We are talking about history in the past with Theodore Roosevelt and the Presidential Library currently being constructed in Medora. But do not forget to take care of your day-to-day technology right in the here and now. And you can do that by talking to Chris Sherman over at Tech Support Farm. Because as we get ready to go to the field, it's not just about oil changes, new nozzles on the sprayer, and new shovels on the cultivator. We got to make sure that all of our technology is up to speed as well. So again, check him out, techsupportfarm.com. That's Chris Sherman. All right, so we are happily visiting today, getting a heck of a history lesson with Matt Briney. He is the Chief Communications Officer for the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library, which is currently being built in Medora, North Dakota. Okay, Matt, I'm going to test you. Was there any particular breed that Theodore Roosevelt was raising on either the Elkhorn or the Maltese Cross Ranch in his time in the Dakotas?
He raises Texas Longhorns. So they were brought up from Texas really chosen because they were able to handle the rugged terrain and the sparse grazing and the cold winters. His is an open range grazing. So their cattle roam free throughout the year and they're foraging for food. It's actually stuff that we're going to be allowing to happen at the library site when we open too.
Bringing some Longhorns in to graze the front lawn?
Only if the ranchers around us have it.
Well, I'll tell you what, they're less problematic than goats, so thank God TR didn't have goats. Okay, so additionally, I remember a story. I was able to go to Medora a few times as a kid, and I remember a story about some rustlers who took off with some of Teddy's cattle, and he went and got them back. And that's true and going to show up in the library?
It is true. Yes, he did. He was actually deputy sheriff for a portion of the time. Medora at the time, this is the about as, wild and rugged as you get it. And the Badlands were named for that, right? If you had a dispute, you had to sort of handle it yourself. Now, fortunately, he has Bill and is the rest of his team there to help him with this. You go after and retrieve the things that you need to, because there's no lawman to be able to do that for you.
Well, one of the things that was also happening at the same time that Teddy Roosevelt was in Western North Dakota was the Marquis de Morez had come from France, and he married a German banker's daughter. They were raised in New York, and her name was Medora von Hoffman. And she married the Marquis de Morez. They came out. The city of Medora is indeed named for her. But the Marquis had a very different plan. And what he chose to do was, at the time, live cattle were shipped on rail to Chicago for butchering, for processing. He wanted to build a packing plant in Medora, have ice stops along the way on the train route, and then process, or literally butcher, beef in Medora and then ship them by train to Chicago. He thought that would reduce the amount of shrink that they'd have, et cetera. Do you know of any business ties that Roosevelt had along with the Marquis?
There's not a whole lot that I have in my knowledge here. But, what I do know about it is that they had a tense relationship. If you have been watching the Elkhorn TV series on ISP Network, this is something that they dramatize a little bit more than reality. They were never outright enemies, but Roosevelt certainly distrusted the Marquis. And he thought the Marquis is arrogant and reckless, and Marquis viewed Roosevelt as an outsider trying to play cowboy. Very different approaches. The Marquis is a capitalist speculator, and Roosevelt just trying to tame the West. Now, there is a rumor that a potential duel between them in 1885, conflicted from political tensions, offering different views of the region, and perhaps some bruised egos. The duel never occurred, but it just kind of goes to show that, they didn't necessarily get along.
And Matt, we've got a couple of email questions. First one was, when is the library expected to be finished?
So we are going to open to the public on July 4th, 2026. That's the nation's 250th birthday. And we've got, we'll be making announcements on how you can be part of that celebration this July, in 2025.
Perfect. And the second question was, okay, it's been pronounced two ways. Is it Teddy Roosevelt or Teddy Roosevelt?
Very good. You know, both are probably correct. You know, we have several Roosevelts on our board, and that's how they pronounce their name. But I think that, you know, there's many acceptance of that through time.
Okay.
As you think about the things that you're going to be presenting in the library, first of all, if you were to go to Medora today, you would be able to go into the Theodore Roosevelt National Park. There's a whole loop where you can see bison, much like when Teddy came out here as a hunter, and he would have seen them in the wild. But his cabin is preserved out in Medora. So are you moving his cabin to the library, or what types of exhibits are you planning to highlight?
No, the Maltese cabin will remain where it is, okay. But the library, you know, the library is this really innovative building. It's a sustainable building. It has a green roof. It's designed to blend into the Badlands, so we're not taking away from the natural beauty that surrounds us. It's built up on a butte. It overlooks into Theodore Roosevelt National Park, and the museum side of it is a very interesting experience. We are combining both traditional museum galleries, what we're calling our narrative galleries. This is where you can see objects like his rifles, his pistols, you know, specimens that he collected, and different items from his past. But then along that biographical journey, you're going to step into worlds that show his life. So you're going to be able to go to a replica of the Elkhorn Ranch, and you're going to be able to sit around a campfire. You're going to be able to go into his brownstone in New York City. You're going to climb Kettle Hill in Cuba with him. You can go into the president's and see into the White House at the time and see how it was decorated during his lifetime. You'll go through Africa and you'll go down the Amazon. So all these different places, we're going to take you into these experiences. And these are going to be immersive galleries where you're going to really feel like you're there, combined with really innovative experiences and original objects. We're currently working right now on developing out what you're going to be able to see there and the actual objects. We're working through those agreements right now, but I think we've got some really special things that have not been seen to the public before that you're going to be able to see when the library opens.
I personally am very excited to see the library. The connection to North Dakota is tremendous, but just the other things that he was able to do in his life. And this guy was, Teddy Roosevelt was a real rancher. He had his own brand, which is prominently displayed in the city of Medora. He, you know, raised cattle. He was a good part of the business community in there. It wasn't unusual to see him at the Rough Rider Motel, well, at the time the hotel, I should say, but the Rough Rider in the city of Medora. When the life that he had here in North Dakota, in anywhere in his journals, did Teddy Roosevelt say that he may never go back to New York? Did he think he would always stay here, or what did that look like for him?
I think that changes over time. I think when he initially comes out, yes, I do believe that this is his intention. This is his plan. I mean, he's devastated. And you'll see that throughout his life. You know, after he loses the 1912, you know, the Bull Moose election, you know, he goes off down the Amazon. You know, after the death of his father, you know, he pours himself into public service. So there are these tragedies that happen, and then you know, and then he goes and finds himself usually through nature, and so I think that's what he's thinking that he's going to do. You know, he writes to his sister nonstop, and our president and CEO Ed O'Keefe has a book, The Loves of Theodore Roosevelt. I would encourage you to read it, and you can learn about the women and how the interactions and how influential they were in his life. But it kind of, he's keeping correspondence, and, you know, I think ultimately he's starting to realize that, he misses some of the aspects of public service. And so the time out in North Dakota strengthens him. It gives him new perspective on life. It allows him to interact with people he wouldn't normally interact with and fall in love with some of those people and their lifestyle and what they have to deal with. And I think it inspires him to want to help serve them. And so that the policies that he thinks about as governor, as president, you know, he's always has in the back of his mind, you know, the people in Medora and in his policy decision making.
You know, one of the things that I really want to make sure to highlight is Teddy Roosevelt was incredibly close, like you said, with his mother. He had two wives and also his sisters, and he had tremendous correspondence with them, and they all shared their opinions, and that really helped what he was doing. One of the things that I did learn is that when we talked about name pronunciations, in his family, it wasn't Teddy Roosevelt. It was Teddy, is what I've understood, is that's what his sisters called him. They all had nicknames for each other. And so, yes, those things changed over time and it became Teddy. And yeah, I did see your question, Dean. He did have two wives. His first wife died and then he remarried.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. He wasn't running a harem.
Gotcha. All right.
Yeah. That's no problem.
I'm like, wait a minute. I didn't know that about him. Yeah. Holy cow. Matt, we're going to put a picture up in live stream, and it's the old picture of Teddy riding the moose there. Is that going to be verified as true or false when the library opens?
Can we document the authenticity of this photograph?
You know, I'm going to defer that one to our collections manager, but yeah, I mean, he is known to do some pretty crazy things throughout his life, and nothing really stops him. And you know, it was funny because even the other day in Medora, someone rode into town on the back of a buffalo. They tied it up to the fence post, the hitching post outside the little mow, and you would believe it, but the buffalo ran away with the hitching post. You know, so I mean, these activities still happen in Medora today.
Wow. You are not wrong. If you've ever been to Medora, and yes, there are still hitching posts. Although in the peak of the tourist season, it's hard to fit your Prius in there with the other big trucks.
I'm sure.
I mean, I can park better than the little cars if I bring my pickup. So, Matt, we are excited to see that the library is opening again. Can you reiterate some of the places that people can follow along with construction, whether it's through website and so forth? And then we all should start marking our calendars for opening day.
Absolutely, yeah. You can learn more about the library at trlibrary.com. I would encourage you to sign up for our email newsletter and follow us on social. Our social media, we update that on a daily basis, not only with updates on the library and its construction, but TR history. So it's a really fun way to follow and learn more about TR. And we really look forward to welcoming the world next summer in July 24th, 2026 when we open.
Well, July in Medora is usually hot as Hades, so best of luck for those who are standing out there. Have some extra sunshades up for us, but it would be totally appropriate to ride your buffalo and wear your spurs. So it'll be a good day. Thank you so much for joining us, Matt.
Thank you so much, Bridget. Thanks, Dean.
Thanks, Matt. So when we come back, we're going to run a recap of the weather and talk about some thunderstorms on radar right now. And there's snow in the forecast. Got to love this time of the year. A little bit of something for everybody. That will hit a couple of ag topics when we come back. Don't go anywhere. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Friday, last Friday in March. And just want to remind everybody, next Thursday, we will have myself, Bridget, and Gary Lezak, the founder of the LRC, and we will have our spring and summer outlook, so have your questions ready. You can email them in advance if you'd like, weather@flagfamily.com. And again, we'll be going over month by month and kind of pinpoint when we're expecting our spikes in precip, when we're expecting drier weather, any heat waves, all that good stuff. And I think Gary has a specific date in July. He said, watch for a widespread severe weather outbreak in North Dakota. And I can't recall the exact date. It was July 10th, something like that. Yeah, earlier mid part of July, expecting a big severe weather outbreak up north here. So Again, that's next Thursday on the Jay Thomas Show, starting at 2 o'clock, and we'll be talking about what we're expecting over the spring and summer. But short term wise, we've got some showers and thunderstorms on radar.
Here's a party, here's Bridget and her blender.
Whoops, that's that was the wrong sounder. How about
really?
A cyclone? What's a? So we're looking at a few thunderstorms out in Hubbard County, exiting areas. Just east of Detroit Lakes and moving eastward into Hubbard County. Now, there's more showers out to the west of the valley. Those will be moving in here as we head towards evening. We're in the upper 40s right now, and we're not going to move much more than that. We'll see temperatures starting to fall off as we head into the afternoon as north winds pick up at 15 to 30. And that rain will come to an end after about 9, 10 o'clock tonight. We'll dip down into the mid to upper 20s, and then a slight chance of some light snow late in the day on Saturday. Most of that's going to be down into South Dakota, stretching into Lakes Country, where those areas could pick up 2-3 inches of snow. The Wahpeton area could get about 1-3. I think here in the FM area, unless this thing shifts a little further north, we'll have a trace to a half inch. It's not going to cause any problem. We'll be keeping an eye on that over the weekend, though. And we're in the 30s over the weekend and pretty much upper 30s to start off next week. Now, we are looking at a stronger system heading our way as we head into Tuesday and Wednesday of next week. That's got more moisture with it. Right now, it looks like mainly a snow event. And yes, that will be accumulating snow over parts of the area. So that's something we'll keep an eye on. And temperatures next week, it looks like by next weekend, not this weekend. It seems, what is this, third weekend, fourth weekend in a row? We've had just crappy weather.
Well, I was gone last weekend, so
it was
I'm still going to count it.
Saturday wasn't fun, and then Sunday the sun came out. But it looks like next weekend we'll start to see a little more spring-like weather heading our way. Heck, it's in the 80s right now down in the Central Plains. Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas, and Missouri, they're all in the 80s right
there's
now.
There's some areas in southern South Dakota I've been getting.
That are in the low 80s.
They're certainly pushing the
80s. Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, spring is there. It's down to our south, but it's having a hard time making it this far north. But the following weekend, we'll start to see improvement. So.
We'll
see how that irons out.
We are not that tropical as of yet, but one of the things we are very familiar with in this region would be sugar beets, not sugar cane. Although I have quite a few little tidbits about sugar cane. Now, in the sugar beet world up here, we feel very prominent in that industry. We raise the largest number of acres. And in fact, Sesame Street once had a little kids video on it. So if the song sticks in your head, beet, beet, sugar beet, 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 that's from Sesame Street.
Is it really?
Yes, it is. But sugar cane, a little bit different. And cane is primarily grown in Florida, Louisiana, and Texas. In fact, Florida has over half of the U.S. production. There's also cane in Hawaii. Now, when you think of how you're going to raise this, cane is actually a grass. And that is a perennial crop. It's planted in 40-acre square fields. It's a lot like bamboo. So you will lay the stalk down in the field, put a thin layer of soil over it, and it's called eyes that sprout, like potatoes have eyes for the sprout. Same thing with the sugar cane. And that plant will stay in the field for 3 to 4 years until its sugar content starts to drop. Then they will rip the field and take it to a cover crop or something compatible. Sometimes it's even rice. If you've ever seen TV segments, movies, etc., where they're burning a cane field, that's real. Sugar cane is actually 75% water as a plant, but the cane, when they burn it, it gets rid of all the other plant debris in the field so you can have a clean harvest to get to the cane. Mm. And the EPA does actually monitor air quality at the time that you're doing burns, particularly in those states. So you can harvest sugar cane 24/7 from October to May. Which October is about the time we're harvesting as well, but we certainly are done long before that. And all sugarcane is moved by rail, a rail car. One car will hold about an acre of sugar. So between 850 and 1,000 rail cars will move the crop to one of three sugar manufacturing mills every day. Cars are tracked and owned by U.S. Sugar, one of the nation's largest producers by volume. And U.S. Sugar does still work with the marketing and product and processing of sugar beets here in our region as well. So we still have more sugar produced by sugar beet than we do by cane, is my understanding, especially across the U.S. But Sugar cane is a zero waste crop. The molasses that's extracted from the sugar gets used for animal feed. Cows like sweet things. That's why they even like cookies. You can use it to de-ice roads. We use beet juice here on our roads to do that up here. And then there's something called bagasse, which is a milling byproduct, and it's a biofuel that they use to power the mills where they're actually processing the sugar cane. So sweet facts about sugar, and it's not just our beets. There's also a lot of cane raised here in the U.S.
Nice.
Yeah, and in Hawaii, some of that cane gets used in feeding animal operations because, believe it or not, a couple of the islands in Hawaii have very large cattle ranches on them. Yes, I saw that look. Yes,
wow. Okay.
We do. It's a little tougher to ship to processing, right. But going to want to do that out there. But yes, there are cattle ranches in Hawaii.
All right, good deal.
Yep.
Any fun plans this weekend?
I will be in Lisbon tonight for the Ransom County Crop Improvement Association. So I'll see you guys tonight. I'll be speaking somewhere around 7 o'clock.
Great. We're going to the Hockey Regional Finals tomorrow at Shields, so that should be a good time as well. I want to thank everybody for joining us this Friday afternoon. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.